Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor Garrett Wong, who in 2012 played James Lee in the film Rising Sun, and myself, your favorite helmsman, Robert Duncan McNeil, a.k.a. Robbie McDunk, RDM, Robbie D., whatever you want to call me. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast and lots more bonus material, all kinds of extras and fun stuff by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers. Rising Sun. Tell me about it.
Well, before we go there, I just want to say I tried to. Okay, we have some people that listen to us only and some people that actually watch us, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Those who are watching us, I was trying to do, when you were doing the intro, I was trying to do a Delta and then I was trying to do flyers.
Finger flying.
I was just trying to come up with a gesture.
Like a cheerleading move. Yeah,
like, Delta, flyers, like that.
Go, Delta,
yeah.
Flyers.
Yeah. Yeah. Go. Yeah,
we need Delta
like
Flyers.
Or I can just go like that, right?
Whole
Delta
cheerleading squad.
Look at that, Delta Flyers, like that. So nice. There you go.
That's our secret code for those of you that have video. You can see the secret hand signal.
Yes, and that would be for our Patreon patrons.
Yeah,
Patreon patron. It's hard to you say that know the really fast.
Handshake.
Secret handshake.
Delta Flyers.
There you go. Yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay. Rising Sun, 2012.
Yeah,
tell me about it.
Couldn't even remember what you were talking about. And then I was like, oh my gosh, another independent film.
Yes.
I don't even know how somebody reached out to me that knew someone else that knew someone. I don't know. It was just, I didn't even audition for this. I was just called up and said, hey, do you want to work on this project, this independent film, this short basically that we're doing? And I said, okay, yeah, I'll do it. But I play like a martial arts instructor that has a dojo, and I'm dealing with my kid. I have a teenage daughter in it that I'm looking after.
We never talked about this before. Have you and I talked about this?
No, we have not talked about this because it's not my biological daughter. It's someone that it's my friend's daughter. My friend passes away and she would have been an orphan. So I'm taking care. I'm raising this kid basically.
Okay.
Yeah. And the thing was, I'm supposed to ride a Harley. And the whole time I'm filming this, I was thinking about you. I was like, dang it. I wish Robbie was down here because they wanted me to film a sequence of me riding the Harley into the side, parking it on the side of the street where the dojo was. And I don't ride motorcycles. I don't ride Harleys. So that's a big.
They're big bikes, depending on which one it is, but they're heavy.
It was the what's the widest one you can get?
Fat boy.
It was one of those. It was big.
Soft tail.
Maybe it was soft tail. Whatever it was.
Road Glide.
Yeah, it was big and it was cumbersome and it was heavy and it was. And I told the director, I said, I can't ride this. They were like, oh, I thought you said you could. I said, no.
Did they
Robbie
have a double
McNeil
for you?
Can, but I can't. So no. So they basically found the guy that owned the bike rode it. But he doesn't look anything like me. He was probably 20 years my senior. He was Latino. You know, it was just a whole nother. It didn't look anything like me. But they still filmed him riding it because they had to have someone ride it in. So it was really bizarre. The first time that we shot with the motorcycle, it was like, okay, well, we can show him riding up and then we can show me getting off of it. you know what I'm saying? So we kind of did that.
I've done that with stunt riders a bunch, you know, they drive up and then when they reach for the helmet, you cut to the close up and off comes the actor. Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, they found a couple of other actors that you would recognize in other projects, and kind of cobbled together this little indie film, short film thing that they did. So I don't know, whatever. I'm to be honest, they were going to try to shop it to make it into a longer full length project. Sure, is what sense. It was. Yeah. So it was more of a teaser thing than anything else. So not, instead wow. of a finished project.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I had fun on it. Everyone I worked with, all the actors were great. But other than that, don't have a lot of memories.
And the motorcycle.
Yeah. And the motorcycle. I remember the motorcycle. And the DP, the director of photography, was Lethal Weapon actor Danny Glover. It was Danny Glover's cousin. That's all I remember. Yeah. It was like, yeah, our DP's Danny Glover's cousin. I said, oh, that's cool. So
that's cool. Did Danny Glover come to visit?
No, he did not.
Oh, well. So.
I don't know. I mean, maybe, yeah, maybe he planned a visit, but never showed up. I don't know. But, but yeah, that was, again, it was another independent project that was so long ago that the details are.
Yes.
Starting to evaporate.
You have a memory like mine. Yes.
It's turning sometimes. Into it. I'm yeah. 4 years behind you, man. So, you know, it's happening.
We better get through. We've only got 8 more episodes or something like
that. I can't
believe
7
or 8
that.
More
that is,
episodes.
Yeah. Let me just, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And if you count Endgame as 1 and 2, 7 and 8, we have 8 episodes left.
Wow. That's it.
This is it's incredible. We've come this far.
Yeah, we better get through these before your memory completely goes.
Let's
and you can't
it.
Remember that you were ever on Star Trek. Since we're getting near the end of the series, I've gotten very nostalgic. Rebecca and I, we're all talking about the old days. And she found, last week she found, or a couple of weeks ago, she found Workforce Part 1, mm-hmm. my actual script that I used. We found both of my copies of Workforce Part 2.
Good.
So you guys know, we're going to put mm-hmm. those up on the store. There's 2 copies of Workforce Part 2 that Roxanne directed. And for this week's episode that we're reviewing, we found 2 scripts of Human Error.
Yeah.
And I found the shooting schedule, which has our whole schedule of all of the elements for each scene in the order that we were shooting them. So like the very first shot of that episode, Human Error, of this episode, was in Astrometrics with Janeway, Paris, Tuvok, and Seven. And
very
it
cool.
shows you the schedule. So we're going to put the shooting schedule up on the store. We're going to put 2 scripts from Human Error, 2 scripts from Workforce Part 2. I even found a script for The Void, which we did a while back.
But nice.
Check out the store if you want these scripts. They're actually my scripts that were given to me on the show. I've kept them all these years, and now they can be yours because I'm letting it go.
All you got to do is go to thedeltaflyers.org, and go look at our shop section, and you can find these scripts from Robbie. At some point, when I start going through all my boxes, I will probably do the same thing that Robbie's doing. But at this point, Robbie has the spotlight. So if anyone is interested in those scripts, please check those out. Remember, there's only a couple of them. So
I've only got 1 or 2 for not yeah, even every episode. Yeah. So
someone's going to be the lucky bidder or yeah. the lucky purchaser of these scripts. So good luck to everybody on that one.
Let's get into it. Human Error. Here we go. We're going to go watch it and we'll come back with our recap and discussion. For all our Patreon patrons, stick around for your bonus material.
Okay, we're back.
We are back.
Shocking about who directed this one, because
yes.
he just directed part 1 of Workforce, and they had him come right back while he's in post-production.
He must, yeah, or, just back to back. I know.
I mean, he's doing pre-production for this episode while he's doing post-production for Workforce part 1, basically, if you yeah. think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was busy. This was very busy for
that's
him.
That's not the norm, though, Robbie, correct? I mean, who comes back
no.
that quickly?
Well,
no.
When I did
Chuck,
Dawson's Creek.
Dawson's.
I would often go to do a couple in a row. Not 3 in a row, but I'd do.
Wow.
I'd prep and then shoot one and then go right into prep and then shoot another one. So I'd be gone for like, you know, 6-7 weeks.
Right. But there was another director in between your two episodes though, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. While I was shooting my first one, someone was prepping to shoot theirs and then... Yes. Yeah.
Okay. And
then
so you've done shooting, this drill. You've done the Kraker right here. Yeah. What Kraker has been doing.
It's not, it's not, it doesn't happen a lot,
right?
But,
it does happen.
I'm trying to, it does happen. I'm trying to think this year, did I on Resident Alien, did I do, I did the first episode and then Leah Thompson did the second and then I did the third episode. So I was back to back.
That's right.
And then I didn't direct again until the eighth episode. So. Mm. Yeah, it does happen. But yeah, we love Alan. I'm thrilled. And
by the way, I love that you had Leah Thompson directing. You guys had Leah Thompson, of all people. My childhood crush watching Back to the Future. My gosh. Yes. Okay. All right. Let's start off with our poetry synopsis for Human Error. Here we go. My haiku. Seven tries dating. Chakotay is the flavor. Could have been Harry.
That's the best haiku ever.
Oh, thank you. Let's hear that. Let's hear that limerick. Let's hear the limerick.
Here comes a limerick. And I think my limerick is going to give you a sense of what I thought about this episode.
Oh, boy.
Okay, here we go. In a poetic way, I'm going to share my feelings a little bit. We'll get into it in the recap.
Let's hear it.
Okay, here we go. Seven goes on a holodeck binge and gets feelings for Chakotay a tinge. The ship's nearly destroyed, but destruction we avoid. And this episode really makes me cringe.
Ooh, you added your own commentary about the episode in the limerick for the episode.
I did. I don't normally do that.
Could I call that meta? What do I call that? I mean, what's happening right now?
Yeah. It's art. It's art. Exactly.
It is art. It's your choice. You chose to do your limerick that way, and no one can judge that. That is your absolute 1000% choice. Wow. How? You didn't like this episode at all.
I did not.
I'm so sorry.
This episode,
I'm really sorry. I didn't have as violent a reaction as you did.
I did not like it.
There's some odd points in here. That's for sure. Okay.
I have some evidence. I have some.
Okay.
I've done some research. I have an original script. By the way, as I mentioned before, I've got a bunch of original scripts.
Yes.
This is the original script from Human Error, the one that was given to me.
Right.
That we're going to be putting up on the store. But thank God I found it, because I went and looked back at the original script at a couple of things where I was just like, I can't believe that that's what they really wrote and intended.
Oh,
that just put it over the edge for me. And so I've got some post-it notes. Yeah. So when we get there, I'll be talking about it.
Yes. Funny enough, every season we have a different colored cover for our Star Trek Voyager scripts. Season 7 was green. So hence, for those of you who are watching this, every time Robbie lifts it up, it's basically another green screen, essentially. So
I can't get the camera.
Yeah. But trust us, it is. Oh, yeah. When you've kind of wave it around, you can see the actual green for a split second. Okay. All right. Well, let us continue. We talked about director. How about writer? What's the...
The writer, again, here's Brandon Braga. I was insisting that he had been part of Workforce, but no.
No.
Brandon Braga and Andre Bormanis.
Oh, Andre Bormanis. Yes. I say Bormanis, you say Bormanis, however we pronounce it. It's still Andre. But yeah, we've had Andre on as a guest, and I was really shocked. I was like, oh, Andre wrote this with Brandon.
Yeah. And this was his story by Andre and Ken Biller.
Okay.
So
interesting.
Andre, it seems to me with these credits, the way things are credited, seems to me that Andre had this idea.
Yeah.
Sold it, developed it as a story with Ken. And then Brandon came in and wrote it with Andre.
Right.
Or polished it. Andre maybe did the first pass and then Brandon took an editing pass on it. And so that's how I think those credits. So it feels like the genesis is an Andre Bormanis. I said Bormanis.
That's the way I pronounce it. Thank you.
I know. You got me.
Oh, I'm changing you.
Let's dive right into this, though, because I really want to get into it.
Okay, so the episode starts with a shot of two candles and an open book, which then racks focus to a close-up of a metronome in the foreground. Which, so I thought, wow, this is kind of art housey to begin with. I'm like, what's happening here? So the metronome is going on. Then all of a sudden we have another shot where we see an 18th century bronze bust of, I don't know what composer or individual that
Beethoven
is.
Beethoven or somebody.
Yeah, Beethoven, somebody, Mozart. And then the camera pans down to see hands playing on a piano. We get a bunch of different shots of the hands, different angles.
The sheet music.
We do see from behind, it's a female, blonde female, hair down. And so we're assuming this is probably Seven.
Yes.
Then all of a sudden it does cut to a very close up profile shot of Seven playing the piano. So we know it's Seven, but then it very abruptly cuts to the show's opening credits from there.
It's
and I thought,
weird.
What are you doing?
We reveal that it's her and then it fades out without a sound. Nothing happens.
Nothing. And it goes, bam. There's no inciting action. There's nothing to pull
down,
us into this episode.
Is this supposed to be compelling? Like, is this?
No, it's not compelling. It's more sort of art housey in a way.
It was bizarre.
You know what I'm saying? It was bizarre. It's a very art house film.
I'm going to go right to the script for this scene.
Yeah,
it was such a weird scene. I was like, is that how they wrote it?
Yeah, read it to me.
Because I thought that the shots were very cool. And I thought, wow, I guess that Alan Craker must have had these ideas of these shots. Right. I gave him the credit for that. But no.
Wow.
In the script, scene one, just a metronome beating a steady tempo over and over. Scene two, snow is falling outside by a bay window. The panes are edged with frost. Scene three, flames crackle, a fireplace in a stacked with wood. Scene four. So all of these shots were scripted.
Wow.
This wasn't Alan Craker who came up with these shots. Scene four, it continues. We see from behind a woman playing piano dressed in casual clothes.
Yeah.
Scene five, the woman's hands on the keyboard. Scene six, tight shot on a sheet music. Scene seven, tight shot on her eyes. Yeah. We didn't get that shot. We didn't get a tight shot of her eyes.
No.
And then back to the metronome where the camera moves slowly to reveal Seven of Nine.
Mm-hmm.
End of the teaser. That is exactly how it was scripted. Nothing happens except we reveal Seven of Nine knows how to play piano. Is that supposed to be compelling? I immediately was like, I'm not.
Can I give you a little context right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you remember early on when Janeway revealed that peach or apricot nighty and that scene? Okay. That was directed by Rick Colby, who was dating Kate Mulgrew at the time. And there was that very slow push into Kate, like unnaturally slow, because it was his homage to his girlfriend. You see what I'm saying? It was sort of like he really souped it up because he was in love with Kate. So he felt like, oh, this is my love letter to her. And I'm going to really. So it was almost overly dramatic and overly when it shouldn't have been. And so the context I'm trying to give you is Jeri Ryan is now divorced from her husband. And she is dating Brandon Braga. So Brandon writes this very kind of romance novel beginning because he's deeply in love with Jeri Ryan at this point in history. So
but
that's why I'm saying.
For the audience, there's no
story.
There's no story.
No, because that's not what his intention was. You see what I'm saying? His intention was, this is darling, sweetheart. I'm going to carve this whole script out to just showcase you and how much I love you.
It was bizarre because we didn't even see her until the very end. And it would have been different if we had done all of this. She's playing piano. Oh, she's playing piano. And then all of a sudden, red alert. Or something.
And some inciting
the holodeck goes off and she's got to run to do something.
Yeah.
At least we would have felt like, oh, she's playing piano, but there's something's happening. Nothing happened in the scene. So I give it a thumbs down.
Okay. And I'm going to play devil's advocate. A lot of times when you go to film festivals and you see some real art house films, there are certain scenes that really don't go anywhere. It's just a scene to be a scene. That's it. And this
but
is
you
pretty
admit,
much.
You said originally this was weird because it
was
just
weird
because
it
to the
so
credits.
Abruptly went to opening credits. There's no inciting incident. I said nothing happened.
That's what
it's
I'm saying.
It's just
that's
her
all I'm
playing
saying.
The piano. Right. But that's I'm telling I'm you, saying. The context is Brandon yes. Braga is in love with Jerry Ryan at this point in history. That's it. OK, they're dating. They're an item. So
I know.
I'm just saying that sort of informs how you write, or maybe he was so in love he was jumbled up in his head. He couldn't find the proper format of inciting incident, bringing us into the story, you know, that he typically writes with.
Maybe.
Because Brandon, okay. I think, is a great writer. I think he's a talented writer. He can get the job
done.
Too.
I did
and
too.
I'm just saying.
That's why I'm surprised with this whole script, to be honest. There feels like so many.
Yeah, I hear you.
Derailed, weird moments.
I hear you. I'm not as turned off as you are by this script. I cannot wait to hear your rating of this.
Cringe.
I know
fest.
You're cringing big time. I know.
Okay.
All right. So the only guest star is Manu. Interimi as Icheb, who is still wearing the exact same outfit he has had on since he's been on Voyager. I'm really upset. I feel like somebody should have said, hey, we're going to take up a collection, or we're going to use our replicator rations to replicate you some more clothing. I mean, what is happening here? It's just not fair. All right. We're in the mess hall. Torres's baby shower is happening. So you were right. Your guess was that something happened with the babies.
I remembered we had baby stuff, but I thought it was Seven asking B'Elanna about motherhood or something. I knew that Seven was trying to figure out this human thing, but I thought it was all about the baby.
Right. But you did get the thing right about her asking B'Elanna a question. She does ask
her
a question
about
later.
The hair.
It's about the coiffure as she's described it. So but anyway, you were in the ballpark, which was good.
In the ballpark.
Right?
We're in the mess hall. It's a baby shower. It looks legit. What we don't know is this is all
it's all a holodeck program. Yeah,
holodeck. Yes, a holodeck program.
Mm.
Baby shower. I loved when Tom takes the puzzle that Tuvok gave, the Plenok puzzle as a baby gift. And he says, oh, I love a good puzzle. And then immediately breaks the whole thing. That was very funny.
My favorite moment was my gift to you guys when she opens it up and she says, Tora says, Starfleet diapers. And I say, standard issue. And right at that moment, it cuts away from the scene because it's Seven walking off with Janeway to the side.
Yes.
And you hear did you hear what you said? You go, well, at least I know who to call if there's a containment breach. Breach of poop or pee pee or whatever, right? So it's very low. So you have to turn up your volume. But Paris does have almost a sotto voce voice. It's very low because it puts the focus on
dry comedy. Technique.
It is.
That's
I liked it.
Underplayed comedy.
I liked it. Seven does walk to the side with Janeway and thanks her basically for being there for her and showing her the way. And then I love the last line where Seven says, may she inherit. She says, Seven says, may she inherit a sense of logic from her mother. And basically it's a cut on Tom. And then Harry goes, I'll drink to that. And I loved how the flourish and how much I dived into that line of I'll drink to that. I was almost almost like someone who drinks, it was funny to me.
It also in this scene when Seven talks to Janeway, it surprised me when Janeway says, you don't need to regenerate anymore. She's getting rid of her Borg implant. She doesn't have her Borg implants. We didn't mention that.
That's right. Like, we totally forgot.
Seven doesn't have her Borg implants. So
correct.
The doctor's like, well, now that you don't have your Borg implants, you don't need to regenerate. Maybe you could use some quarters. And so I was like, wait a minute. I don't remember this. It was all very confusing to me, but it does appear for the moment. We don't know we're in a holodeck yet.
No,
it appears like Seven's fine. She's totally human now. She's going to get some quarters. And that is happening.
Yes.
Weirdness.
Yes. We jump to the bridge and now we're in real time. Paris, the camera comes across Paris. Paris says that there's a energy discharge that he's reading on long range sensors, but all of a sudden it's gone. So he reads it and then it disappears. And Tuvok says that these discharges keep happening, and they're happening about 5.9 light years ahead of us, and we just can't get a clear reading. We're not sure what they are.
Can't get readings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Janeway says, hey, 7 of 9, call 7 of 9. Yeah. We hear
Go to Astrometrics. Yeah, yeah. Is what she says.
Go to Astrometrics. And so we hear 7 say acknowledge, and then we cut back into
Mess Hall.
And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the moment. I was like, this is all. Yep.
And that's when she ends the program. Yeah,
she's a computer
program.
It was all a simulation.
Yeah. And that's it. Now we know it's not the real deal. Didn't really happen.
Now we know that simulation was wrong, because Tom Paris can do puzzles. And that's why he broke the puzzle, because it was not the real Tom Paris. Tom Paris, he'd be fine with that puzzle.
Of course. And, you know, she would never dare to say, may the daughter inherit some sense of logic, you know,
exactly,
in real life to real Tom. She would never say
Tom
that.
Tom is smart and he can do puzzles really good.
Do puzzle. Okay, good. Good. And he's good at evasive maneuvers.
Yes. We do go to Astrometrics, where 7 and 2 Vok are talking about scans. She picks up some unusual subspace radiation and metallic debris, but no vessels, she confirms. And now Janeway brings up to Tom, she asks Tom, does Balonic suspect anything?
Yeah,
so we realize that this baby shower that 7 was practicing for
is really going to happen.
Is really going to happen. Mess Hall 1400 hours being in time. Right.
Well, Janeway tells both Tuvok and 7 who are in this scene. She says, "And I expect both of you to be there," because she knows these guys are the ones that never go.
Not social. Right?
They're the party poopers. They really are. And so, 7 says, "No, I'm busy." And Janeway insists, "No, I think you can find the time." Yes. Janeway leaves with Tom, and there's a little conversation between Tuvok, basically commiserating with 7 about her uncomfortability at social gatherings.
Exactly.
And I keep thinking, to be honest, these two are the perfect couple, really. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you know, forget about Chakotay later on. It's these two, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
She talks a little bit about in this scene about how she's trying to get better at social events, or she's trying to learn things, new things. Mm-hmm. And we jump to the 7's new quarters, which looked like it was a green screen for some reason to me. I was like, why does it not look clean?
It was so empty. It was empty.
Is that what it was? It was just odd. Yeah.
It was just an empty quarters. Yeah. Neelix is there with her. I love when he's looking around. He's looking around because there's no furniture. There's nothing in her.
There as a bed.
She's back to the So now we know the rules when she's back to that look with her hair down. And
That's
not the real deal. So we know immediately she's back in another simulation.
Do you think that's what the intent of the writers was in the beginning? Was just, hey, the only way we're not going to confuse our audience is if we have to make sure she has no implants on during the scenes that are in the holodeck, and then
probably
put them back on. Yeah, I think maybe that was a smart thing for them to do.
Yeah.
Well, Neelix discussing interior design.
I love as he moves around the room, he does like this circle dance, his little like jig, which I thought was very funny.
I liked it. My funny part, what I got out of here, was when she's looking at one wall and she says, a multi-spectral star chart might enhance this bulkhead. And then Neelix is like, or a painting. And she's like, painting of a star chart. And I know, it's like a painting entirely, not a freaking star chart. We don't need that. You already do that all day at work.
The other thing Neelix in this scene suggests is maybe adding some color, photographs, artwork, or knickknacks.
Yeah.
7 goes, knickknacks? And he says, yes, little carvings, like the wood carvings in Ensign Kim's quarters.
What wood carvings are those? Did I do a carving of a saxophone? A wood carving of a little tiny clarinet? Maybe I did a wood carving of you, Tom, because I said, this is my best friend. I'm going to whittle. That's what we call it in the
US.
Tom Paris, right? I'm going to whittle you.
A very specific wood carvings like Harry's. You don't have any wood carvings that I'm aware of. We're going to have to go look at episodes with your quarters, but I don't
know.
That's not a significant thing in your
Brandon was head over heels in love with Jerry, and he didn't even remember what Harry has in his quarters. So he just wrote that. He's like, wood carving. What would you think the wood carvings are of? I joked around. One was of Tom, one was of a clarinet. And what would you think if you were to say Harry's got wood carvings? They are of what?
I think Harry has carved a wood image of all of the women that he's met in the Delta Quadrant so far. He's got a collection of wood carvings of all of the ladies he's fallen in love with. His memories of all of them. That's what I think.
I can always count on you to make me laugh. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Chakotay comes in. He brings a
housewarming gift.
A housewarming gift, which is a dream catcher.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, oh, it's such a cliche. I wish it had been something more legit. It feels like a dream catcher to me is like something you get at the gas station near the, like, it's just such a touristy cliche. I wish it had been something a little more specific.
Or what if it was a really futuristic looking dream catcher, like a something different than the standard
dream
catcher you buy? No,
it just
New
felt
Mexico.
Like such a low hanging fruit, easy cliche answer to put to say the Native American character is going to bring a dream catcher.
We have
banned dream catchers on Resident Alien with our indigenous stories. We have a lot.
Are you being serious? You're being totally,
totally serious.
Wow.
Because Kenny Frost, who is our indigenous advisor.
Yeah.
He says they're not a huge part of our culture. There's so many other things. It's become the dream catcher symbol has become a cliche, a caricature, a cartoon of our culture.
So let's say it's very 90s. It's a very 90s choice for them to do that. Seven does say, hey, I studied up all about your culture. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, this is the episode where something happens between these two. That was my key right there. She studied up about his culture.
Yes.
As he's about to leave, she then says, hey, wait, I've been working on learning how to cook new things. How about you come to dinner? And there it is. He asks out Hollow.
Well, this is the first scene, and there's a lot of flirting. There's the flirting when Neelix leaves early on, before Neelix leaves, they flirt a little. You feel it.
Yeah.
And then there's heavy flirting on the, you know, as he starts to say goodnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to pause and say, I think that the holodeck should have safety protocols that we cannot program our colleagues as fantasy characters.
I think it is very, very, you're right.
It's distasteful.
It's also a violation, I think, of somebody's rights in a way, right? I mean, unless you have permission from that other person, right, to do that, you're now using their likeness and their image in for real. You're using it in a real way. Yes.
I found it as soon as they started flirting, I'm going, oh, this is her programming Chakotay. She's stealing his name and likeness and his, he's having an experience with him in a way that is violating, I think. And just imagine, by the way, just imagine if Harry Kim.
Yes.
Programmed the holodeck with Seven and made her have sex with him or do something. That would be, or the captain programmed the captain. And now Harry or Tom programs the captain. Oh, it's just a fantasy. No, this is someone that I work with. There should be a rule. So I found it immediately. I was like,
This is where you became repulsed with this episode
immediately.
So this is in the first, what is this? This is the first 5 minutes of
this. Yeah, this is the first 5 minutes.
And you've already poo-pooed it basically because of this. And I understand that. I understand you. I understand you 1000%. And it's funny because coming from Seven of Nine's point of view, you kind of almost forgive it a little bit because it's the woman making the selection of the mate as opposed to the man choosing the mate.
You shouldn't.
You're right.
It's the same kind of abuse as if a man objectified a woman.
The gender does not matter, right? No. The gender does not matter whatsoever. But I'm saying that I think old school thinking, 90s thinking is that it's a woman selecting the man. So she's making the choices. So it's okay. Yeah. In the 90s, if you had Harry Kim choosing Janeway, it would not have been okay. Even in the 90s, they would have thought, what are you into dreams of forced, you know, rape, basically? You know, I mean, there's issues with that. Definitely.
And not to get ahead of myself, but if Seven really didn't think that she was doing anything wrong, she would have told everybody when they asked later on. And she lied.
She's hiding it, right?
She hides it from everybody.
But
see, so,
but then now then the question arises that now in real life, there are people that have fetishes or have, you know what I'm saying, that engage in certain behavior that they're embarrassed by it. So maybe this is what this is what it's showcasing. Maybe this is what it's spotlighting, or this is another angle that we haven't looked at. Maybe. From, you see?
Seven programmed AI, our holodeck, to put Chakotay's face on a story that's not true.
Correct.
And to use that in a way that I just found it distasteful from the beginning. Wow. I did not. If this had been a fake character, if she had gone to the holodeck to practice her human behaviors with a fictional character she had created on the holodeck, I would be fine.
Yes.
I would be fine with it. To me, the fundamental problem is this is a colleague. This is someone she currently is going to have to clearly walk down the hall with and work with.
Right.
And you should not be able to do that without permission.
Yeah.
Create a fictional character. Anyway, I digress.
Let's move on. All right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So now we are in sick bay. The doctor is singing a lullaby.
Yes.
Yeah. And the lyrics.
Terrifying lullaby.
Yeah, terrifying. The lyrics themselves. Seven brings light to that. Then the doctor says that he has recorded 29 lullabies as his baby shower gift for B'Elanna and Tom. And he's doing this.
What a nightmare.
Yes.
And this is not the holodeck. This is real life. At the real baby shower, really gave them 29 terrifying.
And not just Earth songs lullabies. In English, but you have Klingon lullabies as well that he sings for you. He's doing a maintenance checkup on 7 of 9. He wants to basically realign a clamp in her arm to stop her shoulder pain that she has. She refuses because she has research to complete. Research. He gets pushy. He says, well, what kind of and she basically kind of rebukes him. She says, look, you're getting a little too close, and my personal life is none of your concern. And we jump out of that scene into the bridge, where we have an energy discharge.
Shockwaves are hitting the ship, and Janeway says another. Report. Paris says it's an energy discharge. She's calling for full power to the shields. We cut out to space and see this really cool, you know, wave in space. The first time we see it.
Yeah.
The shock wave hitting them broadside.
The wave is cool, but I didn't like how it hit our ship. The effect afterwards was kind of cheesy, I thought. So, but again, it's 1990s visual effects. So I'm sure current day budgets and technology level would make it a lot better. But you're okay with it. You didn't have a problem.
I thought it was cool. I thought the big shock wave was cool.
Okay.
We come back inside and Janeway says to Paris, next time, you know, turn our bow to the wavefront. It'll minimize the damage.
Yeah.
And Paris is like, sorry, Captain, there wasn't enough time.
Yeah.
I feel like, again, Tom is a smart pilot. Like, I don't know why they wrote Janeway constantly telling him.
I feel like she's micromanaging you. Why is she micromanaging you?
And I feel like I've missed this in this whole podcast, but I'm starting to notice a pattern of like, Tom has never had a moment where he's like, I got the solution.
It's crazy because she doesn't micromanage anyone else. Yeah, no, it's just Tom. And it's so funny because she went way out of her way to recruit you. She had to go to the New Zealand penal colony and pull you out of prison to bring you on the ship. So if you're going to go to that much trouble because this is the best pilot in the quadrant on Earth, let him pilot
his ideas.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah.
I know.
Okay.
But anyway, so there's another wave, but it's too far to pose a threat for us right now. So we go into the astrometrics lab. We see a big graphic of this kind of warhead hitting some kind of probe, maybe, or subspace warheads.
So basically, it's long-range subspace warheads firing at unmanned vessels or probes, whatever it may be. Yes, so it's a military, it's a military firing range. It's a target target range for somebody. We don't know who. We have an exterior space shot of Voyager at Impulse, and then we're back to astrometrics again. And now the doctor, so there's a passage of time. The doctor has sent Icheb to sort of relieve Seven, to give her some more regeneration time. Icheb starts doing this thing where he starts quoting. He's like, don't shoot them. Yeah. Don't kill the messenger or whatever it is. And he'll say the quote, then he'll say who it's from, who wrote it. And this becomes a pattern with Icheb in this episode,
he's got quotes for every situation.
But it's good because it does set up something that made me LOL big time. Cause I was watching this with my earbuds on, and it was very late. And so basically I was watching. And the one thing that made me laugh is the payoff that happens later between these two. But she basically says, fine, I'll give you, you can relieve me. I'm going to take off and get a little bit more regeneration time like the doctor wants. But please keep an eye out for gravimetric distortions, because this is the way that Seven has basically said that we can detect these warheads right before they come out. There's a little bit of gravimetric distortion, and then we know we've got to watch out at that point. We're in cargo bay. She goes to regenerate, but guess what? She changes her mind and leaves.
But by the way, she stands there staring at the static circle regeneration thing. And I just went, that's exactly what Janeway didn't work for. She just stared at the static circle like it shows them anything. Anyway.
Hey, maybe we don't. There's something we don't know. Maybe there's some type of secret society.
Maybe she was high and she was looking at it, going, Seven.
What if the circle is some type of representation of a deity that we don't even know about?
Okay,
and they are okay.
I used to stand there on set and stare at the circles because they are hypnotic. I would just like,
fine.
Look at that pattern.
It's just funny that everyone's been staring at it. Every episode, they're just staring at it.
As if there's something there. Yeah. Anyway, well,
she regenerates for does she even regenerate for a second? Does it even, she just kind of walks up, looks at the circle,
hands
and
on
leaves.
Gets it ready to go, and then turns around and leaves.
She leaves.
We go into engineering. There is a cool twisty shot.
Steadicam
shot of, you see people walking on the glass floored balcony above us. We tilt down. There's Torres trying to get the injector ports aligned. Harry's helping
her. She's busy. She's moving. Torres is on the move. And that's when Seven shows up and says, hey, I'm sorry, I didn't make the baby shower. Here's your gift, which are these little tiny cute little booties. But the way she describes them is so Borg-like, these will protect your infant in minus 75 degrees Celsius weather. Mm-hmm. Just as if you would ever put your kid
super
in that type
useful,
of-
Super useful, yes. Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Seven.
Right. Seven sort of trails after Torres as she's going from station to station. Finally, she says, look, I have a personal question. And Torres is like, yeah, go for it. You have an appealing coiffure. What is your grooming regimen? Which is, again, what a hilarious line.
And then Torres says, wait, you're asking me, what do I do with my hair? Is that what you're asking me? It's very funny.
It was.
This is why I thought I remembered this as if it was about babies, but it was about her hair.
It was the hair. It was hair. I do have a nice, funny little line when Seven does leave, because Torres shoots me a look like, what? And I'm like, must be an alien intruder on board. Bop, bop, bop. So I get a little something there.
A little joke at the end.
Holodeck. Back to the holodeck. That's where she goes. She went straight to her dinner program with Chakotay. Okay. Chakotay. Although time is weird, because they talk about later, they talk about how many hours she spent on the holodeck. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, this is the date that she talked about. It's like there really is only should have been 3 hours. That's it on the holodeck. It doesn't seem like there should be 65 hours. That's however long she spent. Seven's quarters. She's now basically in her dinner date with Chakotay.
She's in a very low cut dress.
Yes. Red.
Hair is down. The Chopin music plays in the background. There's an awkward mirror moment, I thought, when she's looking at herself in the mirror. Chakotay says, "You look perfect."
That was the setup, though. That was the setup, right? For her to look at the mirror later when she sees her Borg self. Correct?
I guess so. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Okay. Chakotay says, "Give me a hand with this." He's trying to get a cork out of the bottle, and they both are sort of awkwardly struggling with the cork, which I just thought, if she's a part Borg, wouldn't she be able to pull the cork out of there?
That'd be so easy for her. There would be no effort for her. That thing would have come out with just two fingers. She would have gone. Okay. So that was a little bit of a hole in the script there. Understood.
They go over to start slicing vegetables. She says, "Please assist me. Slice the vegetables transversely in 5 millimeter increments." Which I thought was, super romantic meal. I also noticed there were a ton of carrots. How many carrots? There was like 20 carrots out there.
I think she was trying to make carrot surprise. I mean, there was obviously it was a dish that was very heavy on carrots, and she needed,
Now, do you think, since Brannon wrote the script and they were dating, Brannon and Jerry were dating at the time.
Yes.
Brannon knew Jerry was a foodie. Is that why there's a kitchen in her quarters?
I think you hit that nail on the head.
Yeah.
I really do. I really do.
Yeah, that's why they put the kitchen in there.
I just don't know why you would write this scene where you have your girlfriend sampling stuff off of someone else's finger, like that whole thing.
So
that
was creepy. Sort
of very creepy. And just, I don't know.
The finger thing made me very uncomfortable. Cringe, cringe.
Yeah, because she tasted it off of his finger. And then he tasted it off of his own finger off of what she just... You know what I'm saying? So if she,
Star Trek After Dark or something going on.
Oh,
here.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, Cootie Central. So it was just like, oh my goodness. This is very,
way too much like sexual
TMI. It's too much TMI right here.
Yeah.
You know,
it was too TMI.
Super flirty and super sexual. Everything.
Super flirty, super sexual. I didn't like it. Didn't seem like Chakotay. And again, this is where I'm like that's not Chakotay.
This is an episode of Red Shoe Diaries. That show, yes. Red Shoe Diary for Showtime. Remember that? Yeah. And it was the guy from David Duchovny was the host or the narrator of that. It's a very
This felt like that tone, and that's not our tone.
This is not a Star Trek Voyager episode. I'm sorry, it's just not.
And by the way, I want to look at the script here to see how the script described their action here, because they do kiss.
Please.
They do kiss at the end of the scene, right?
Please go.
So it says. Let's see. "You're beautiful when you're chopping," he says. She smiles slightly, continues chopping. "I don't mean to sound like an old Hollow novel, but you've got a wonderful smile." Back at him, it wasn't a smile, it was a smirk. Chakotay, "Oh no, it was a smile. If I could check the internal sensor, I could check the internal sensors if you like." She looks at him, an electrifying moment, inches apart. Then she decides to seize the moment of intimacy. "Remain still," she says. He reacts. She raises her hand, runs her fingers along the lines of the tattoo. And then they talk. She leans in, kisses him lightly on the lips. He returns the kiss, gently turning and folding his arms around her. After a beat, they part. "I require more practice," she says. "You're doing just fine." They kiss again, this time closer. The kiss grows passionate. Then we hear the noise and they break apart. So it's described kind of simply here. Like the first time is tentative, and then they break apart. She says, "I need more practice." The second time is, this was shot and acted like it was, we've got an hour to watch them kiss. It just went on and on and on. And that's not how it's described. It's like a test kiss and then a kiss with a hug. And then there's a noise. That's it. It didn't have to be so
drawn out,
sexually loaded.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, my memories of the whole Chakotay 7 canoodling was that it happened in real time and not on a holodeck. Like that was my memory.
I never remembered this episode
being a holodeck thing.
A holodeck.
Yeah.
And by the way, I want to bring this up now because there's moments where it happened.
Yeah.
When we go to real life and Seven's talking to Chakotay, Robert Beltran threw in lots of moments of like knowing, you know what I mean? Where Robert Beltran would see her and say something, give a little extra smile. And to me, and it also happened with Janeway in a scene later with Janeway, when she's going, what are you doing on the holodeck? It's as if she knew. She was playing it loaded as opposed to playing it like no one else knows.
So you're saying both Robert Beltran and Kate Mulgrew in their own respective scenes with Seven played it as if they knew that Seven was doing
something like this, maybe not all the detail.
Okay.
But that so she was doing something with Chakotay. And they both played it that way.
Wow.
And I'll get to it in the script because that was the issue where I was like, to me, that puts it way over. Like, not only is it inappropriate that she's creating a fake Chakotay,
but
the fact that they're playing along with it,
is as even if it's more, real. Yes.
Doesn't feel right at all to me. Like, if they knew
this is
going to
be the lowest rated episode of all for you.
Could be.
I think I think it will be. My gosh. Okay. Where are we?
We come back from the act out and the awkward kissing to Seven playing piano with Chakotay. And
he's sitting next to her, right?
Yes. He's sitting next to her and they're
kissing. But it's a dream sequence, though, because you've got that filter going on, that kind of fuzzy filter. And then all of a sudden the doctor pops in saying that he wasn't aware that she had a personal life. That's a prior line that he said to her earlier when they had that altercation, basically, in sick bay. And that's when she sees her reflection in the mirror of her full Borg self, who she doesn't want to be any longer.
Yes.
So,
and she wakes up basically in this scene. This is kind of, you know, a montage of her dream.
How do you interpret that? How do you interpret this dream scene? What do you think the meaning
I interpret was? That she's sleeping, that they kissed, that they made love, although they're both clothed. So it's hard to know. Well, let me go to the script. It says at the top of the act.
Yes.
The metronome, scene 33, the metronome is ticking. Scene 34, seven of nine at the piano. Scene 35, her hands. Scene 36, on Seven's face, she's playing. Scene 37, interior view of her shoulder. The doctor who's studying the graphic turns and says, I wasn't aware you had a personal life. Scene 38, Seven and Chakotay kissing in the kitchen. 39, flames crackling and then dying out. The fire slowly dies out. Mechanical noises. Scene 40, in her casual look, she looks at the mirror and sees her Borg self. Scene 41, the metronome on top of the piano. We hear Chakotay say Chakotay to Seven of Nine. Scene 42, in the holodeck quarters, she wakes up. So I think all of that was her dreaming, and then she gets a call from Chakotay that he needs her to come down.
Right.
Seven responds, report to Astrometrics. And then she says to fake Chakotay, good morning. And they sort of hold hands. And
no, he says it to her.
Well, he said, yeah, he says good morning. Right?
Yeah, because that's the thing. Because fake hollow Chakotay says good morning in a like sexy kind of way. He's like, good morning. And then real life Chakotay also says good morning to her in the next scene.
When he runs into her in the Astrometrics.
Correct.
Yes.
So, but, yes, they had Nookie or no?
Oh, I think so. The way they played it.
She woke up from her, she slept in the holodeck, basically.
Yes.
You know what
yes.
I'm saying? And wouldn't that have arose some type of suspicion? Because there's people that are on night shift that when they get off a night shift, they're going to want to go use the holodeck. They're going to say, whoa, 709 has been in here for like 12 hours all night long. So that would have raised red flags immediately. Again, just holes in the script, I feel.
Oh, okay. She goes to, runs down the hall, putting her hair back up, runs in Astrometrics, and Chakotay, the real Chakotay, says, good morning. This is a scene where I felt like he was playing as if he knew. As if the real Chakotay.
Well, he knew because he read the script.
Yeah,
that's why.
The actor should not have played.
No, he
should have been totally professional.
Yeah. I'm just going to say I did not see that. I feel like I have to watch it again now to see what when you he just says, said.
It's not like you to be late for a duty shift. Rough night. And he smiled. And I was like, big smile is too knowing.
You would have directed him differently then.
Yeah, I would have just innocent, rough night.
Yeah.
Are you okay? Are you feeling all right? Like play innocent and then leave all this cringy stuff on her plate instead of
unless Brandon told Alan, I want you to direct it this way. You know, I want it to be played this way. Who knows? We don't know.
I'm looking at the script again.
Yeah.
I'm going to see if it's not like you to be late for a duty shift. And then in parentheses, it says light, rough night. So it is suggesting that he sort of smiled, but there was a smile that Beltran did that wasn't a light, like rough night.
Okay.
It was like,
I'll agree with you. It's quite insidious if they're in on the whole thing. And I'm going to say creepy. Because of that, that I think maybe you're reading into it too much and that maybe you see one thing that I don't see in terms of that, that complicit knowing of what has happened with those two characters. I'm going to say that they don't know personally.
I'll go back to the script later on.
Okay, we can. But the funniest part of this whole episode is right here, because when he says rough night, Seven says not at all. Chakotay says, I'll be on the bridge if you find anything. And then he leaves. And so that's the point where Icheb pipes up and says, better late than never. Titus Livius. A history of Rome, and immediately Seven's like, you're relieved. I love that interaction. Oh God, that was so funny. So good.
Now they're playing music. We're in the holodeck music room again, the place we started at the beginning of the episode. She's playing, Chakotay's watching. Basically, this is a scene where she's using the metronome really tightly.
Yeah.
And Chakotay says, hey, try this without the metronome, you know, relax.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just play.
He wants her to be freestyle, right? He wants her just to feel it and go with the flow kind of tactic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kinda go like, with your emotions.
Yeah.
Don't think about it so hard. Right. Don't be tied to this metronome. Her first attempt or two is kind of rough. She doesn't trust herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then she trusts herself. And I did feel at the end when she plays that it was a more free, you could feel the difference between the metronome piano playing and her emotional piano playing. It was nice. It was a nice metaphor.
I kind of wanted her to go from classical to something more classical rock. Like I mean, if she started playing like, dun, 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 just take those old records off the shelf. And she started like, you know, playing all like,
that'd
you
be
know,
nice.
It'd be kind of cool.
It would have been fun. I would have liked the episode better.
See, I knew it.
We go out to space. There's some weapons fire. We cut to the bridge. And basically, you know, this firing range is happening again. There's more weapons being tested.
Mm-hmm.
Chakotay calls for 7 of 9. She says, go ahead. He says, we need those sensor calibrations. And she's in the holodeck.
She's not even at Astrometric. She's in the holodeck. Making googly eyes at Chakotay.
Yeah.
Not good.
She's got an addiction to this thing.
She
needs a 12-step program for the holodeck.
She does.
But she says, I got to get to my station. He says, yeah, that'd be a good idea. Act out. So she's busted. We come back and on the bridge, Para says there's hole fractures on deck 12. Janeway calls for 7. Report. She says, stand by. And then she is just getting into the astrometrics lab.
Yeah.
And she says, isolate subspace band Omicron Theta, direct your sensors to coordinates 17 Mark II. Paris says,
and Paris is like, there's nothing there.
Nothing.
So she gave him the wrong numbers, which is like, and oh my gosh. She goes,
I'm sorry, correction, 178 Mark III, 6. And he goes, oh yeah, I can see him. Two warheads are about to emerge, adjusting course, but it's too late. And there's impact and, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And the shockwave hits us again. But our shields hold. And Janeway's pissed off. She tells Chakotay, why wasn't 7 at her post? And he says, well, maybe you should ask her. So we go to the ready room.
But see, that's why I think he doesn't know. He's like, good question. Maybe you should ask her. Like, he's just, he's,
I don't think
he
knows,
have...
but he's playing sort of a little bit of like, my radar says you're flirting with me somewhere. Or that we have chemistry.
Okay. All right.
He's playing chemistry that was never on the show ever.
And suddenly,
in this episode, he's smiling with her and he's like,
I don't know. All right.
It was just out of left field, all this. We go to the ready room and Janeway's pissed off.
Yeah.
And Seven's making excuses.
Yeah.
Basically, she says, you know, what have you been doing? You've been on holodeck two for like, you know, the last
49 hours in the last 6 days. Let's divide that into six. Mm-hmm. So, 6, 8, 48. So that's basically 8 hours a day she has spent in addition to her duty shift. And the time that she's supposed to regenerate, she doesn't even have time to regenerate. She spent almost her entire time on the holodeck. Yeah. Every free second. And the minute she's not on duty, she's in the holodeck, right? And then she comes back on duty when she's being called and she's still on the holodeck. And that's the other thing. She's not even in Astrometrics.
Yeah.
So yeah, she's
in trouble.
Slightly addicted. Yes.
The captain wants to know what she's doing in there. And she says, I was running a simulation of what? And then she lies, Seven lies, and says, a new gravimetric array that I was developing. Yep. I wanted to perfect the design before I brought it to you. Liar! Okay. She's a liar.
She's lying, but this is where I kind of agree with you. Well, looking at Janeway's reaction, she played it like she knew something was up as well.
She was very suspicious.
Like, I was like, okay, yeah.
And I want to, here's what I'll point out. It says, when she lies in the script,
yeah.
It says, Seven says, a new gravimetric array I've been developing. I wanted to perfect the design before I brought it to you.
Right.
It says, Janeway absorbs this, takes it at face value, and continues.
Oh, so she's not supposed to play that she knows about it.
No.
At all.
And then let's cut to the end of the scene when Seven's leaving. Yep. Janeway tries to lighten the moment. It sounds intriguing. Your new gravimetric array, when this crisis is over, I'd be happy to take a look at it. Maybe I could lend a hand. Seven nods, the guilt weighing on her. There's no suggestion at the end, because even at the end when Kate played this, she says, it sounds intriguing. It was still suspicious.
It was still definitely. She didn't take it at face value. She played
it completely
like she knew something was happening.
And she didn't play it to lighten the moment.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. I'm starting to go to team Robbie right now.
Everybody's playing like they know what's going on, and it's not helping. It's hurting to me.
Okay.
We go to Astrometrics. Ichab and Seven are talking about the sensor data.
Yeah.
Seven is irritated, though. She knows she's made a big mistake here.
Yeah.
And tells Ichab, basically, I'm going to go correct some. I'm going to go fix.
He thinks that he offended her in this scene. He's asking about, wait, did I say something? So, yeah. So she has to go correct that problem. She's gone.
Yeah. And we go to the holodeck.
Yeah.
It starts with a tight shot of candles getting blown out. So you feel like she's shutting it down.
Yeah.
But she activates the simulation. Chakotay comes in and he's brought some food. He says, how does roasted chicken sound? Didn't we just talk about this? That he was a vegetarian in the last episode, but now he's brought chicken that he had roast with. Is he a vegetarian or is he not a vegetarian?
Yes, I have no idea. Yes, yes. But he also brings flowers, right? He smuggled them from the Aeroponics Bay. But you're right. Yes. He brought chicken and the vegetarian is cooking chicken for them. Yeah.
Yeah. But
it's Holo Chakotay. So Holo Chakotay is not vegetarian. Real life Chakotay is vegetarian.
I guess not.
Yeah,
I guess not. Okay. But Holo Chakotay says, what's up? And she says, you know, our relationship is interfering with my responsibilities. We're going to have to cut this off.
Yeah.
And Holo Chakotay literally says, well, I'll talk to the captain. I'll have her, you know, change your duty shifts. And I was like, no, that's a horrible HR move. Like, you can't just start playing favorites because you have a relationship.
Yeah.
Like, again, like.
Yeah. Can we agree on something? Let's abbreviate. Instead of saying Holo Chakotay, can we say Halote?
Halote.
Okay. Halote. Thank you. I like that. Chakotay, Halote. Yeah, it's bad. It's very bad.
Halote does not want to break up. Seven says, I'm trying to correct this.
He's upset. Halote is very upset because
And as he's getting upset, she starts to hear a noise. It's really getting, you know, stronger and stronger. And he says, what is wrong? And she picks up her comm badge, activates it, and calls for a medical emergency. But then we cut to sickbay and She's not answering the doctor. He calls 77, nothing. Mm-hmm. So he says, computer, locate 7 of 9. Computer says 7 of 9 is in holodeck 2. So we cut into back to her holodeck mm-hmm. program mm-hmm. and the doctor beams in mm-hmm. and says, what happened? And Holo Chakotay says, we were having an argument. She collapsed and it's bad. Her cortical node is shutting down. She's going into neural shock. And the doctor notices she doesn't have her facial implants.
Did the doctor play? Did Bob play like he was shocked that it was Halote that he sees here? Does he play that at all?
I think he plays it a little bit. He plays it at the end, at the very end. Because when Chakotay says, I thought you took all the cybernetic systems out of her.
Yeah.
He realizes, oh, no, I never. This is okay.
So
wrong.
He thinks this is real Chakotay then. He doesn't
until
think this
that
is,
moment until oh, Chakotay okay. says, I thought you took her implants out.
Right. He goes, then he realizes.
You know, I didn't do that. So he turns off the computer.
Right.
And turns off the holodeck.
Yeah.
And we cut to 7 on the ground of the empty holodeck with mm-hmm. the doctor and her mm-hmm. cortical implants kind of fritzing.
Fritzing, yeah. yeah.
And that's our act out.
Mm-hmm.
We come back to sick bay. 7's there. She's just kind of waking up. And
doesn't he give her a spray to wake her up?
Yeah.
It's hypospray. She wakes up.
And she immediately calls for Commander Chakotay.
Yes, she does. She goes, Commander? Like she wakes up like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Red flag.
Yes, red flag.
Yeah.
The doctor says, what were you doing?
Yeah. He does say, if you're looking for your other holographic friend, jealous much, are we? Jealous much? Oh, my goodness.
Why, by the way, let's just pause here for a second. Why, by the way, why are the writers trying to put 7 in relationships with the doctor, with love stories? Like, why?
Because they missed out on their shot to pair her up with with Harry. That's how it should have been in the first place.
Why does she have to be paired up? Because she's a sex symbol actress that we have to do romance with her. Why can't they? Why did they have to do any romance with 7 of 9? Why can't they just let her be first learn how to be human before they start trying to put her in relationships? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just didn't. It felt
forced.
Cringy, this whole thing.
I hear you.
But the doctor and 7 talk, and she explains that she has been, you know, conducting simulations to explore her humanity, like social activities, friendships with the crew, even intimate relations. And the doctor says, I take it the first officer is your romantic interest. So she says, yes, he seemed like the appropriate choice. And
he has many admirable qualities.
Mm-hmm. And then the doctor says, why did this all start? You know, what prompted this? And she says, Unimatrix Zero, that ever since, you know, that was destroyed, her life feels incomplete. She wants to feel the emotions that she felt when she was at Unimatrix Zero.
And you wanted to recreate those experiences and those feelings. And so why not recreate the guy that you had a relationship with in Unimatrix Zero, for goodness sake? I mean, why are you pulling on Chakotay? It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the doctor goes to finish the diagnostic basically at the end. Okay. Now we go to engineering. It's another great Steadicam move that I love. They must have had the Steadicam on this engineering day because he used it quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it was very effective. Harry's there. B'Elanna's there.
Yeah. I think isn't the warp core back to. Yeah.
We said
warp drive is back. Yes.
She calls the bridge, says the warp drive is back online. Janeway says, well done. And we go to warp. We go out of space and we're off at warp. We go to the bridge again. And Paris detects another subspace warhead 12 million kilometers away. Tuvok says, we engaged engines, but the warhead must have diverted from its target and locked onto our warp signature.
Because now we are
a target. It's chasing us. We're trying to get away. Paris can't get away from it. And then she calls for a photon torpedoes, full spread.
And again, you and I are both saying, no, you have negative 17 now. You don't even have a full spread left, but
we ran out of torpedoes about 6 years ago.
These are imaginary. These are imaginary friends, imaginary torpedoes. So small children have imaginary friends. Captain Janeway, an adult, has imaginary photon torpedoes. So we fire them. But guess what? That warhead is like a smart warhead. It has anti, you know, torpedo technology. Yeah. So it basically eliminates all four of those torpedoes. They're done. They're neutralized.
That was a waste.
It was another a total waste
of torpedoes. Yeah.
So Janeway calls us a seven. Wasted torpedoes. And seven responds. But Janeway says, look, can you get me anything on this warhead's circuitry? Like, what can we do? Seven says, oh, wait. She's got it. She suggests that she can actually beam out the detonator or the actual circuitry. I mean, and just kind of defuse it that way. This is something that I think people have a little bit of doubt about. They're a little bit worried, but Seven says, well, you know,
especially with her not being
herself lately,
top game lately.
Yeah.
She says, please give me the
chance to disarm this.
The chance to disarm them.
Yep. And it's a little touch and go because she tries, but the warhead is still too far away. She has to wait until it's exactly upon us because mm-hmm. That titanium casing is too mm-hmm. hard to beam through. So now it's literally 1 second away from hitting us. And that's when she's able to beam out the piece that she's trying to take out to
save our cool shot in space.
It was. See it just I like
before
that shot.
Impact. It sort of it transports away.
Right. Cool. It just reminds me of Galaxy Quest, the whole thing when they're like, why does it always stop at 1 second? You know, that's everything goes down mm-hmm. the countdown and then the ship's about to blow up and it's saved at the last second, which is what we did here. Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. When we go to Cartway 2, Seven's there. The doctor comes in with some diagnostic news. Mm-hmm. Basically, that he says the cortical node that she has, the Borg cortical node she has, had the failsafe mechanism that will deactivate drones if they start to regain their humanity. Their
emotion. That's why she passed out. That's what she was on the ground. That's what that sound was. Yeah. Little fritzing.
Even though she's not connected to the hive mind, it's built into the node.
It's like a governor chip on a race car, you know, or something, a stock car where you can't go above a certain amount. Same thing here. Your emotions can't be too much or else you get shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He does walk two full circles around her in this. I was like, That's when Alan Krieger sometimes can push it a little. Like he doesn't want to cut. He wants movement. And the camera always moving. It's beautiful. I love it. And I was like, why did the doctor just walk two full circles around Seven of Nine to give her this news? But he did. Yeah.
But he does. I mean, he wants to take that governor chip out of her, basically, right?
And he says that it's going to take multiple surgeries and it could be difficult.
Yeah.
But he could begin tomorrow.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's got a way to get rid of that so that she can have all these feelings.
Yeah.
And he says, without this procedure, you won't be able to continue your simulations.
Yeah.
And she says, I've experienced enough humanity for the time being. They were only fantasies, inefficient use of my time. And the doctor now is like, well, you don't really believe that. He's kind of pushing her to like, be more human.
Yeah.
You know, let me try this. And she says, nope, I need to regenerate. Good night, doctor. So she doesn't want to go there. She tried it and didn't want to go there. Nope. Our very last scene is in the corridor.
Yeah.
Chakotay and Seven. Chakotay catches up to her. He says, where's the fire? She's walking pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I've got to finish my report. And Chakotay says, hey, Neelix is giving a cooking lesson in the mess hall, Talaxian tenderloin in 10 minutes.
She's no longer interested. Nope.
Mm-mm. No longer interested in cooking. And Chakotay's like, oh, B'Elanna's going to be there. Tuvok even said he'd show up. And she says, no, thanks for the offer. Maybe another time. He says his last line, perhaps you should try socializing with the crew a little more. It might do you some good. And then he walks away. Now, this was he stops behind her and she's standing there thinking and he stops behind her. He looks back at her. She looks over her shoulder. There's like this moment of
knowingness.
Knowing. Now, I went to the script.
Oh, no.
Okay. So in the script, it says,
yeah,
she says, I appreciate your offer another time, perhaps. He says lightly, you know, you should try socializing with the crew a little more. It might do you some good. A beat. He has no idea that Seven's been trying what she's been trying to do all along. Mm. He heads down the corridor. Seven watches him go, a hint of regret, then turns and walks down a different corridor.
So they don't share a look. He's walking away.
even says lightly.
Oh, that's you know, weird.
You should try socializing with a crew. You might do
that's
some good.
So weird.
A beat and he leaves. That's it. And then she looks after him and he's naive about it.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
instead, they both played it like
they both knew.
We should try some of this thing you've been doing in the holodeck. Maybe.
Oh, he stopped. Goodness.
He looked back, smiled. Yeah. She looked over her shoulder.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. Well, do you have a lesson from this episode that you would like to?
Yes, I do, actually. Okay. I have a lesson.
Yes.
My lesson, I typed it out here.
Yes.
If you want an authentic experience, don't use fantasy. That's my lesson.
Okay.
My experience was not real.
No.
It was not real.
No. I hear you. All right. My lesson has more to do with her excessive use of the holodeck. Okay. And it is a lesson I've learned from a prior episode of Voyager, and that is moderation is key. You must have balance in your life. You can't sit there and not even sleep and ignore. And this is how I get when I play video games. If I get a new video game, I sit there and I can game for 11 hours straight, not eat, not sleep, not whatever. And I'm fine with it. And so this is kind of, she went on, you know, this, the correct word for this, Seven went on tilt. If you're talking about a gambling or poker term, she went on tilt in this episode where all she could care about, the only thing that mattered to her was that holodeck. That's it.
Yeah.
And when you obsess on something like that in your life,
it's
where
go
everything
dark.
Else falls by the wayside. It's no good, man. I mean, you've got to make it to work on time. You have family obligations. You have work obligations.
Real life
obligations. You cannot sit here in a fantasy world and just disappear and leave for 8 hours a day. She was in the fantasy world.
I mean, that's do you crazy. Remember the episode Real Life? Speaking of real life,
yes.
Real life where the doctor created a holographic family.
Yes.
If Seven had done something like that, I would.
You would have totally bought it. You would have bought it.
The Chakotay, you know.
Yeah. But see, this is what's so crazy. A slight pivot and you're okay with this episode. This episode doesn't get poo-pooed by you. You know what I'm saying? Where it is, if it's followed the same format of the doctor in the real life, that episode, you would have been absolutely fine.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right. So what is your rating? I cannot wait to hear this.
Do you really want to know?
But you know what? Don't sugarcoat it, please.
We're
almost done with this whole thing. You know, if you get some critiques, we're almost done with the entire review of Voyager. Let us hear it, my man.
I give this episode a 1.
I hear you.
I literally think this is a huge mistake on almost every level. I don't think this is a good episode. I know some people, it might be their favorite episode.
Yeah.
But to me, this was cringeworthy squared. It was just, I give it a 1. I do. What about you?
4. So below the halfway mark.
I have not looked at this yet. I have not looked at this yet. And that's your lowest, by the way.
And that is your lowest ever. We've never given it this low ever. No.
The captain and average rating. I'm nervous now.
9.4. What is it?
5.7.
Okay, that is the lowest. That is the lowest of all the captains and admirals ratings that we've had in the entire time we've been doing ratings. So it's agreed upon across the board.
We may have different levels of poo-poo, but...
Yeah, but it's definitely poo-poo in all our books because it's completely from left field.
Yeah.
And it starts with the intro scene because you sit there and you're like, and wait a minute. Wait, did you?
Nothing happened.
You would start to think, did the editor screw up? Was there another part of that opening scene that we didn't get to see?
I literally thought my TV had broken.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When it faded out, I was like, because I've been having trouble with my I have a projector room. Yeah. I watch it in.
So the projector's having some issues. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been blacking out.
Sure.
The connection's not been good.
Yes.
And so I literally thought when it faded, I thought, Oh, there it goes again. The thing's
there it
gone.
Goes again. That darn projector.
And I rolled it back. I'm like, no, that was it.
How
they actually did it.
Now it's opening credits. They went right. So from the get-go, opening scene number one, red flags everywhere for everyone watching this episode, unfortunately. Some very funny lines and some very funny dialogue that was written in there by the writers.
Alan Craker did a beautiful job directing, even though he made Bob walk two circles around. I still like his direction. I thought whether it was scripted. Like some of those shots in the first scene, I thought were him. No, it was in the script.
It was all scripted. And you got to agree with me. That's also rare. Where it's laid out in that kind of detail. You've got to be kidding me. Yeah. That's sort of like, it's almost like, did you even need Alan to show up here? Like you just broke down every shot. I don't know.
And by the way, and I know this is a small sample, our average rating is 5.7 and what you and I gave.
Yeah.
But. You know, people always say when I go to conventions, oh, Threshold, the worst episode ever.
Yeah.
Was Threshold a 5.7? I don't think so.
No, definitely not.
It's not that low.
No. I'm going to say Threshold is like Lawrence of Arabia compared to this episode. So, no.
I wonder if I have my Threshold ratings.
No, and I get Robbie, a little defensive Robbie, Threshold. About... No, listen to me. Threshold, the only thing that turns people off is that ending. It's just the whole seeing the salamander babies is just like freaks people out. And I think that's it. Up until then, it's a great episode. And then all of a sudden it's like, what? They have children, they have offspring, and they're abandoned in a way. So it leaves you with a sour taste in your mouth. That's what it is. That's it. Yeah. But up until then, great acting by you, cool prosthetics, a great,
great beginning, sci-fi premise. Middle,
great sci-fi premise. I feel like this episode, the sci-fi was a C storyline. The whole Warheads thing was almost like a C or D storyline. Everything, the A storyline was the hookup. The B storyline was the makeout. The C storyline, it just kept, it was a soap opera.
Cringe. Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's put this behind us. Thank you everyone for tuning in. I'm sorry if Robbie and I sounded like if this is your favorite episode of Voyager, we apologize if we offended you, but this is our genuine feelings about this episode.
And it is.
We're just gonna say thank you for tuning in to hear us gripe about this one. And join us next week where I'm sure we will have a much more positive outlook on Star Trek Voyager episodes in general. Join us for the episode Q2. And any episode that we have Q in it with John Delancey is a good episode. So I'm sure everything will be sunny back, skies back and normal. Rainbows back to normal again. So join us then. For all of our Patreon patrons, please join us for more torture after this.